Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Isotope, Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, Isotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit isotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. Matt.
Joe.
I'm trying to think of like more dad jokes at the moment to start each episode with, and I'm going through my, you know, I'm going through working out the ones that are good, the ones that are bad, and I'm thinking like, why are jokes about elevators or lifts, why are they so classic and so good?
Why?
It's because they work on many levels.
Nice.
Why should you never trust atoms?
Why?
Because they make up everything. Hello, dear listener. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe. That was not a swear. You won't need to beep that one out.
It's fine. Welcome back, dear listener. Welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Obviously, last week, dear listener, we had the Brighton Guitar Show, which Matt and I and JD went to. So we spoke a lot about all of those things last week. It was a little different from our normal format. But this week, we're going to be back talking about a bunch of stuff, loads of things from the Facebook group that you, dear listener, have suggested. Of course, as many of you are aware, Matt's got a new guitar. So we're going to be talking about that this week.
Indeed. I'm assuming you posted that in the socials, did you, Joe? Facebook absence.
Yes, because you're not on the social medias anymore, Matt. I did. I posted it on there. So it's saying exactly what it was, that Guitar Nerds had purchased for you a Fender Strat Plus because you've been doing this for 10 years and you've never asked for anything. So
only your undying love.
Exactly. I think it was the most popular post that's ever been posted on the group. Loads of comments, loads of likes, loads of feedback. People saying how much you deserved it. So it was really nice. You should log in for a day just to see that post.
We should also... I'm assuming you might have responded directly, Joe, but the lovely gentleman who responded about the Patreon in the toilet.
Yes.
Thank you for sending your very nice story about you listening. Yeah. Warmed my heart. And it's always nice to know that we've made a difference to at least one person's life. least one, anyway.
Yes, yeah, that's right. It was Chris Garner. He actually followed up this. But by the way, one of the things I was talking to him about was how cool is this for a little story. I'll read it kind of directly from what Chris had sent to me. Sometime around 1998, I somehow lost the
the box with all my effects pedals in it. Or so he thought, as his brother recently discovered the box in his loft and he was reunited with his 90s collection of pedals. It's wonderful, a wonderful experience unexpectedly finding your exact pedals after all those years, kind of the pedals that you probably like cut your teeth on to an extent, had in the 90s, the early days of like effects pedal, like pedal boards really being, well, I know it's not the early day of pedals, dear listener, but you know, there was a real standard range of effects that everyone used at that time. We certainly weren't using big switches or anything like that. Get this for the pedals on the board, and it's such a perfect time capsule of effects of the time. Marshall Bluesbreaker standard, a TS-10 classic, the Ibanez Tube Screamer classic, a Boss CE-5, a Boss BF-2, the flanger, and a DD-3. Oh, and of course, a Crybaby Wah. and actually also a Dan Electro Wasabi forward reverse delay, but he didn't get that. Worth, that wasn't in the box.
Oh, they're worth about 300 quid, so that's probably the only one that's worth something.
Oh, damn.
But yeah, I remember the first time I bought a Crybaby and I took it home. My dad was like, oh, you know, what's that? And I was like, I was called a Crybaby, and I didn't really understand what it would do.
Right.
And he was just like, oh, I can see why they call it like a crybaby. But yeah, I just remember the first time getting home, plugging it in to the pedal board, being like, I don't really know what I'm going to do with this, but loads of people have got a wah pedal, so I guess I'll have a wah pedal. And that's how we all got started. It's just messing around, plugging in things we shouldn't.
I got a wah pedal actually this week. Hold on, I'm going to get it because I can't remember what it is.
Is it a Snarling Dogs one, Joe? I've seen a few more of those come up. Joe is digging through his pedal collection. I'm hoping that Joe, I was going to send this to you earlier, that on Reverb I've seen a Bootsy Collins signature wah pedal come up, the Snarling Dogs one, yes, the Bootzilla one.
Well, I sent you a Reverb listing the other day of one of the Snarling Dogs ones, because there was one for like 99 quid. It was the green one.
You said it was the most average. It is the most average one. The Bootsy Collins one has got a different dog on it that looks like Bootsy Collins. I've also just realised that the first picture has whoever is the current owner's bare toe sticking out the bottom of the screen. But it's got a fuzz circuit on it as well, which is quite cool.
Yeah, that's not what I need. I actually just want sort of a normal wah. So I'm thinking about getting that one. But then JD sort of long-term loaned me this, which is the EBS Wah 1, which is EBS, obviously, pretty much a bass brand exclusively. Mm. And this is their wah pedal for bass, which is fantastic, actually. Very, very, very good. I realize I don't really own any wahs. I always do it with like an expression pedal via the MS3, because I've got I've got that massive Boss one. Do you remember that huge absolute
yes, the PW,
I've got it here. I'll tell you, it's FH500H.
Oh, that's just a volume pedal.
No, it's an expression pedal.
It's got an expression out, yeah. But it's not it hasn't actually got a sound in it. Sorry, I missed that.
I always use the MS3 for the sounds, because they've got like a whole range of wah sounds and bass wah sounds on the MS3.
Yeah.
So I use it with this normally, because the oversized Boss pedal is great. If you've got the room on your pedal board for this, dear listener, the action on it.
I've got one now.
It's so much better. Yeah, they're so much better. I want a big expression pedal that I'm not going to miss, or that I can, you know, that I can slowly move through those phase sounds for without the sort of the seesaw bit being too quick.
Well, talking about crazy wah pedals, I've also got a Dan Electro Dano wah and the Dan Electro Trip L wah, which are the ones that look like cars.
Wow.
I'm just trying to have a look. The triple wah has different push buttons on the side for... Oh, yeah. One side, it's just got exhaust pipes for decorative use only.
Yes.
And then you've got a treble on and off, a mid on and off, and a bass on and off.
Oh, that's so good. There's one on Reverb for £52 right now, Matt.
Yeah, and they're also like... cheetah print.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very breaky. They're made of plastic.
That's a shame.
I wouldn't actually step on one. And just below that, the Backtalk reverse delay, £229. So go and find that one in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, very cool. I always feel that Wah pedal was most people's second pedal or third pedal, like everyone
They buy, you mean?
I always feel that they have a distortion pedal even before, like, I feel like delays and reverbs came much later for me. Like, I had more modulation pedals and drive pedals than I probably had anything else, like, early on. And I remember the first time I plugged in a delay pedal, I was like, what's it doing? He was just like this sound, and then just played it, and I was like, how are you ever going to use that? Little did I know that 25 years later, I'd never turn it off.
I think Wah is everyone's second pedal, or, you know, second or third after an overdrive, mainly because as soon as you've mastered the pentatonic and you suddenly become aware that turning on a Wah makes you sound like some sort of virtuoso genius
when coupled
with some simple pentatonic solo.
I think that's always the thing, isn't it? It's like Kirk Hammett, you just step on the Wah and
all
the riffs sound better.
Yeah. exactly.
But yeah, Crybaby. God, you just think how many I know, you know, we talk about, I think when we did Wah's a DS1 last year and we were saying it sold 1.4 million. That point, I was like, I wonder how many Crybabies.
Dunlop don't really need to make anything else, do they?
No, pretty much Crybabies and that's it. And you could say about the same about Boss, but I think need to make more than a DS1.
How about that? Well, let's talk about your guitar. Let's talk about the new guitar that you got this week, the Strat Plus.
Indeed. So I guess I'll start by giving everyone a short history, not necessarily... Well, I will give a short history of the Strat Plus, but also the reason behind the Strat Plus. So the first... Actually, I guess it was the second proper guitar that I owned, but the one that I gelled with... I guess the most was in 2005, I applied to go down to BIM in Brighton, Music College in Brighton. And we went down the first time for the audition. The second time I went down, we went into GAC. That was the first time I'd ever been into GAC. And they had that guitar. They had a 1997 Strat Plus in Shoreline Gold hanging on the wall. Second hand, and I was like, oh, it looks just like, because, you know, I had a theme even back then, because my other guitar was also in Shoreline Gold, and I was like, oh, just, you know, I'll need a backup guitar, you know. I didn't know what I was gonna take or anything like that, and I was like, plug that in, I was like, oh, it's amazing, I love it. And that became my main guitar for the next, I guess, really until I started working at GAC and then started earning some money. I think the next guitar that I bought after that was my Gibson SG Standard Faded, which I still have. But unfortunately, the Strat Plus went at one point probably to fund something else, as you well know, Jack, when you work in music shops, you just tend to see stuff that you want, but also you can't afford it, so you trade stuff in, you sell stuff.
The problem is that everyone's always around you to egg you on to make that purchase. So you buy and sell stuff so often working in a guitar shop.
And I think those early guitars, you I don't know, you sort of gel with them, you play loads of guitars because you're working in a music shop, and you always feel that those guitars will come back around, and they I guess they never do.
I mean, when a Strat Plus is a relatively rare guitar, you should have known better, really.
Well, yeah, should have, could have, would have. So anyway, so that was the history of my original Strat Plus, and that was the guitar that I guess a lot of my love of guitars and Strats certainly came out of. So when we were talking about getting a guitar, I said it should be a Strat Plus. We've talked about it on the podcast for years. Love that Lay Sensor tone. And this one came up at a really reasonable price, believe it or not, in Brighton, but it was a different guitar to my original one. And I got it, and it's fantastic. So for people who don't know, the Strat Plus was effectively the first guitar that came out of the new era of Fender, the sort of post-CBS era of Fender. So Fender had basically a totally tanked reputation by the mid to late 80s.
So is that when did the Plus come out? When was the
88.
80. Oh, right. So it's late in the 80s as well.
Yeah.
So at this point, Fender have been through nearly a whole decade of not being very popular.
Basically, yes. So 88. I think it was Dan Smith. Obviously, he's sort of credited with sort of like the revival of the Strat, bringing in the first kind of vintage reissues. Basically, you had really good quality Fenders coming from Japan at that point. So the Fender American brand had sort of lost its way.
Right.
Very, very much so. So they launched two guitars, the Strat Plus and the Strat Plus Deluxe, in 1988. Probably towards the end of 87, you probably started to get some.
Okay,
so, so basically the...
But 88, so Strat Plus came out in line with Die Hard hitting cinemas.
Basically, and this is the Die Hard of Strats. So effectively, the Strat Plus was a totally, I guess, a kind of redesigned body curve. So it's still a Strat, but it's very much had its kind of, it was trying to go back to its roots in terms of its vintage design. But Plus would indicate that they were trying to do something new, something extra, fresh. So you had a Wilkinson compensated nut, which later became a Wilkinson or an LSR roller nut. So that's effectively where there's two ball bearings each side of each nut string slot. So basically zero friction nut. Locking tuners, 2-point trem. So you're moving away from the 6-point to the 2-point. It's a lot more accurate. It obviously allows for a greater freedom of movement and a more dynamic setup. You've got solid steel blocks rather than the pressed steel saddles. And then you also had a TBX tone control. So it's kind of like a tone control on steroids for your bridge pickup.
But it's not active, right?
It's not active. It's basically two stacked tone controls. So the 0 to 5 is your normal tone control, and then 5 to 10 is like putting a tone control on top of your tone control. So it brings out, some people call it like a treble booster, but effectively it's kind of adding bass, middle and treble to your signal all at once. They were solid older bodies, as you'd expect. And then they came in a rosewood or a maple neck with a rosewood or a maple fingerboard. You also had a micro tilt neck adjustment on it as well.
Classic.
So they kind of tried to take all the elements that at the time were very new, but also basically brought the Strat into a modern age, while at the same time, I believe they were kind of bringing out the vintage reissue Strats and kind of going, here's our heritage, but also here's what we can do for... You've got to think, you know, in 87, 88, you think of the guitars that were popular at that point, Super Strats, Shredding, you know, they kind of had to have something that wanted to compete with that. And actually, although there's some debate on whether Jeff Beck actually popularized the Strat Plus, was built for Jeff Beck, or that he had they kind of happened at the same time, but effectively the Jeff Beck custom shop, they built him in 87, had basically the same spec.
I see.
And even though he never put his name to a signature to it at that point, he did play one, or like a modified one built in the custom shop.
What fretboard radius?
9.5 Right. So okay. Again, so very modern.
Quite modern, I guess, but they didn't go crazy modern.
It wasn't like 12 or anything like that.
Right.
But the big thing, I guess, is the Lace Sensor pickups, because this was a whole completely new design of pickup for the time. And I was sort of doing a bit of reading on this. So they're basically, one, they're completely silent. It's the quietest guitar I own, like, hands down.
Right.
So if you imagine that a normal pickup, effectively, they said a normal pickup has unnecessarily strong magnets. So if you imagine each pole piece has a kind of magnetic field that comes out of it and round each side to the bottom. So it's got a fairly big magnetic pull around it, which can create more noise, and it can actually drag the strings and dampen the sustain. Where a Lace Sensor works in a slightly different way, where there's a radiant field that eliminates any 60 cycle hum, sorry Ryan and Steve, and then effectively has a less magnetic pull with a smaller field. So you get a quieter pickup, you get less magnetic pull, so you get more sustain. And the way I would describe it is they just sound like the most stratty strat pickups. Like, for me, I always think the ultimate strat tone is Sultan's Swing by Mark Knopfler. You know, that's like uber twangy strat
sound. That is a perfect example of strat tone.
And I'm just like, it sounds basically exactly like that, which to me I absolutely love. They look very strange inside the Lace Sensors, but ultimately still sounds very, very much like a Strat. Right. It just sounds like a super Strat, I guess I would say. So ultimately it is, in my opinion, certainly for the time as well, the ultimate Strat. That also then sort of gave birth to not only the Jeff Beck signature, but also the Eric Clapton signature. So the Eric Clapton came out in 1989, also had the Lace Sensors on it, but had the vintage saddles, and I think had a vintage radius as well on it as well. And his had the active mid boost.
That's such a weird blend of things.
I know. Very, very. But then again, he was going through his big 80s phase at that point.
Yeah.
But the great thing is that it basically never goes out of tune, which I remember from the one that I had. Now, the one that I had had a slightly different bridge system, which they did for a very short space of time, which basically had a single locking Floyd Rose trem system. So right. The strings locked in at it didn't, they didn't go through body. They actually locked into the saddles.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But obviously it didn't lock at the nut because you had the roller nut in there. So it was super easy to set up because obviously locking machine heads makes it really easy. And for the first time ever, it had something which I've never had in a Strat before, but they did actually come as standard for a while in many of the Strat Pluses, which was a hip-shot trem setter, which basically compensates for the string tension of the trem when it's in a neutral position. So it basically means if you snap a string, it doesn't go out of tune. But also it means that if you play an open E and then bend a note, it also doesn't dive the trem. It's very weird.
That's an issue with Strats. I didn't know that was an issue, but you mentioned that before we podded.
Yeah.
And actually showed me an example of on one of your guitars.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I guess people have, you know, Strat purists would be like, well, they've always done that, and that's the sound of a Strat. And I was like, I get that, but also you've got to think, this is 1987, 1988. It's like, you've got Ibanez down, like, knocking down the doors of like every famous guitar player being like, we've got Floyd Rose, our guitars don't go out of tune, like, you can tread all over it. So I think this was very much supposed to be the best Strat you could buy. So, and then on the flip side of that, you had the Strat Plus Deluxe, and the Deluxe had different pickups in it.
Right, so that's different. So was this one humbucking in the bridge with two singles? Was this HSS and the Strat Plus is SSS?
I think that's correct, because they also did a deluxe plus telly, which is the Johnny Greenwood telly.
Yes, with the double two-lace sensors.
Yes.
More of a humbucker.
So, and I think it maybe came in some different colours. Maybe you got slightly different decal on the headstock or something like that.
Right.
And then they basically made that guitar all the way up until, I think, 1999.
Wow, it lasted
maybe
that long.
Maybe 2001. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were discontinued. They went all the way up to that point. They did a bunch of amazing colours, which I don't think Fender have ever done before or since.
Well, the one you've got is a pretty bonkers colour. I've never seen anything like it.
Black Pearl Burst. So it's a gunmetal grey, metallic gunmetal grey base. I'm trying to make sure I get this the right way around now, with a black burst sprayed over it. Or the other way around, I guess a black base with the silver burst around the
outside. So it's silver at the tips, isn't it, and moves to a black in the inside.
Correct. Right. I just had to double check it. I was like, yes, that
Which is
correct.
The reverse way around from the way you think it would work. If you were going to do a black guitar with a burst on it, you'd think it would move from dark to light, but this one is the reverse.
So some of the colours they did, the 88 colours are uber rare and also very cool. So that was the first year that Graffiti Yellow came out. And Graffiti Yellow was there because of Jeff Beck. And it was because it's the same color. And I didn't know this. Fact of the day. And I'm going to pull it up here. So that was basically, Jeff Beck loved hot rod cars. The film American Graffiti had this hot-rodded car in it, and it was on the front cover, and it was in that yellow. It's a hot-rodded 1932 Ford Coupe featured in American Graffiti, the film American Graffiti, and that's where Graffiti Yellow comes from. So it's the yellow of this hot-rodded 30s
Ford.
Basically, from the film American Figure. I had no idea. So maybe you learn something new every day. But basically, a couple of the colours that I think look amazing, I've looked them up. Dusty Rose. Dusty Rose is like a kind of muted shell pink.
Right. That sounds great.
Which they only did...
Metallic?
No, it's like... Oh, it's basically like shell pink, but it's a bit darker. It's a bit more...
Okay.
Dusty, I guess you would say. Right. And they also did, and dear listener, if you're at a computer, you'll definitely need to Google this colour. They did a colour called Raspberry, spelled R-A-Z-Z space B-E-R-Y.
Raspberry.
Raspberry Red. It's a rare, basically 80s colour that's sort of in between Torino Red and Fiesta Red, I guess.
Right. Sounds
terrible. It's brilliant. I love it. They also had a few different burst colours, as you'd expect. They're obviously trying to go very much for some of the sort of more modern colours that are out there as well. You also had things like Bahama Green. So lots of different kind of guess classic car colours, whether they were actual car colours. Lipstick Red, which is, again, it's a different type of red you don't really see. Caribbean Mist.
Wow, these are some funky names. This is pure 80s by name. Did they get the cast of Three Men and a Baby to come up with the names of these colours?
Caribbean Mist. They also then had Electric Blue, Sonic Blue, Vintage White, so the colours you'd expect. And then they also did, and these are uber rare, they also did a bunch of they did some aluminium body ones.
What?
Yeah. So in 1995, 1996, they did some aluminium body Strat Pluses. that had a hollow aluminium body, which then were painted in blue metal burst, stars and stripes, violet metal burst. And they look wicked. They look really good. They also did some like bowling ball burst finishes as well, I guess you would say.
Wow.
At that point. But for the real history, for the real download of the history, go to...
I'll put this link in the description. Yeah,
Safari Guitars, spelled X-H-E-F-R-I guitars.com. And this chap has written a whole thing about it. But yeah, colours that I would definitely love to see reissued. Electric Blue, Caribbean Mist, and Dusty Rose are wow. three colours that I would absolutely love to see in the Fender catalogue.
Wow.
But ultimately, with all of that, Joe, it is... I played it and just went, this is the reason I love Strats. It's great Strat sound, great neck profile, super easy to play. And I was just like, if I'm going to collect any type of guitar, I'm just going to collect Strat Pluses. Yeah. I only want Strat Pluses. They're great guitars. They yeah. really are great guitars. And people will no doubt poo-poo the lace sensors, but they are actually really good.
What is it that
really
people don't
pickups.
Like about lace sensors?
I think
that
a lot
they
of
sound
people
a bit anemic, a bit thin.
I guess a lot of people don't like them because they effectively get rid of everything that technically makes a strat, which is the right. noise and the hum and the rawness of a classic, you know, Strat pickup. And I'm like, no, get rid of all of that. What I want to do is I want to sound like David Gilmour from 1995. Because, yeah, at that point, you know, very much that 90s Pink Floyd thing. You know, it's a certain particular area of...
When he was playing the red one.
When he was playing the red... so he had the red Strat and then he had the 0001 white Strat as well at that point, but the red one had his signature EMGs in it. And again, I think it is that element of taking away the noise,
right?
And then when you take it away and you're like, wow, this guitar's like uber quiet, it's got amazing sustain on it. And I guess perhaps when you're so used to a guitar sounding another way, or even though you might not necessarily know what might be causing that, you kind of go, it just doesn't sound right. If you know what I mean. But it is actually... And Lace make a lot of really, really cool pickups, which I'm definitely up for trying at some point in some form or another. And you can actually buy, if you've got a Strat and you've been inspired by me, you can actually buy the JB-loaded pickguard. So you can have the Jeff Beck. So that's the double humbucker or the double single coil in the bridge with the two other single coils. But you can also buy the Strat Plus configuration, which is the Lace Sensor hot gold loaded pick guard. So you can just drop that straight into your favorite Strat and be blown away by how good they sound. It just basically made me want to buy loads of other cheap Strats and then basically make other Strat Pluses. I just want them to multiply. But it's killer guitar. It's, if you get the chance to try one, you won't be disappointed.
This does make me want to get a Strat again. I mean, that time period where I had like four Strats at once, and now I have none. Now I've got no Strats.
I've actually got three. I had none at one point, and then I was like,
What year is your Strat Plus?
So the Strat Plus is 1995.
Right. Relatively late. So what does that mean? Does that mean better for you in terms of the... You said there were a few changes. There were changes to the nut?
Yeah, I think technically a lot of people say that the later ones are slightly better because they've moved to the roller nut rather than a sort of compensated steel nut. And also there are a couple of other minor spec changes.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But to be honest, I think they're all relatively consistent.
Right.
But yeah, 1995, so nearly, scarily, 30 years old.
Well,
wow. Which makes me feel rubbish.
It's still fantastic. Still looks pretty much straight out the case, really.
I mean, it came with the case. It came with the original trem arm, all the original pieces, and all the original tags. And everything. The only thing I would say, Joe, and this is, I'll leave this one for debate on the Facebook group. Maybe we'll come back to it next week. Played it straight out of the box. I think it had 10s on it. I was like, oh, it plays and sounds great. Set it up the way I want it, put 11s on it. Still plays and sounds great, but I'm like, actually, I might have to go back down to 10s.
What? Why?
I don't know. Tens on it, it had this like slinky kind of feel to it. And I was like, and it was a bit brighter. And I was like, oh, maybe I should have kept it the way it was. But actually, I'll tell you the one thing I had to do, Jay, which was painstaking, but absolutely worth it, is if you think about it, and I hadn't really clocked this until recently when I bought the Ed O'Brien Strat. If you've got a maple fingerboard, you've got to spray that with lacquer. Now, it's obviously, when you've got a one-piece maple board, you put the frets in, you can't mask off each individual fret.
No.
So they
lacquer over the frets.
Lack over the whole thing. Yeah. And obviously, as you then crown and, fret dress it, that, you don't really think about it, but actually there's lacquer on either side of besides the fret. You don't play that bit, but obviously the lacquer is there. Now, as the guitar ages and the lacquer becomes more yellow, but also becomes more brittle, you actually realize that half the frets have got some of the lacquer on, some of the lacquer off, it's chipped. The frets needed a really good clean anyway. So I actually spent a painstaking amount of time scoring along every individual fret on both sides to peel off all of the lacquer,
right?
And then buffed all the frets, then polished all the frets, and now it's like a completely brand new fretboard with like zero fret wear. The only thing is, it's just got a couple of ding marks from where it's sat in a, in a stand, or someone's bumped the base of it. But
did you use the Music Nomad Frine stuff?
I did. I also used. So I used that last, but what I also used was an Amazon purchase, which actually worked out very well, and I've seen other people using them. I thought I might have got, ripped off because I'd never heard of them, but fret erasers. And they are basically rubbers that are ingrained with a certain amount of grit at varying levels that you then work your way through five different stages of grit, and it basically polishes them up one by one by one. And then frying the whole thing.
Wow, that sounds... Well, you really did put the hours in on that fretboard.
I did. I probably put about... also, because I'm very slow, I probably put about four or five hours into just cleaning that fretboard.
I do not have the patience for that.
Well, you just put on... I can't remember what we even watched. Oh, we were watching some film... we were watching The Days, which is about the Fukushima nuclear disaster. So very, great background watching while you're cleaning your fretboard.
Wow.
So yeah, put that on, a few episodes of that, and then I'm like, oh, I'm done. There we go. And then the rest of the setup was dead easy, apart from the trem setter, which I've never done before and was a minor pain in the ass. But once it was set up, it worked very, very well. Very, very well.
Well, how about that? Well, that Matt, that sort of leads us into something you wanted to talk about, which was birth year guitars.
Indeed.
Now, dear listener, obviously we've got a variety of ages of people that listen to this podcast. Some people get a better year than others for getting birth year guitars. You get cooler things available to you. I'm 84. What are you? You're 89.
87.
87. Sorry, 87. Okay, so fine. We're kind of in a similar area for birth year guitars. You mentioned this earlier, but this is a time period where Ibanez were absolutely storming, the walls of Gibson and Fender's dominance on the guitar world. There were some great things coming out. There were also some real absences from Gretsch and from Gibson in this time period, which really limits us on what we'd go for. I assume you've put some time and effort thinking about what your dream guitar would be. 87, I guess you can't even really have a Strat Plus.
No, unless I cheated and went, oh yeah, I'll have the prototype. it was funny because I was thinking about this because a couple of YouTubers that I follow mainly, and I haven't seen him for ages. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but a chap called Hunter, based out in Atlanta. He runs a channel called AguFish, and he's modded a bunch of guitars, and he is a super, super nice dude. And he was talking about, he did a whole video about buying a birth year Les Paul. He really wanted, I think it was like an 89 Les Paul or something like that, Les Paul Custom. And it just got me thinking that I'm very, very close to a birth year guitar, but also so close that it's annoying that I don't have a guitar from the year I was born, because my Paisley, made in Japan Paisley Strat, is 88. Now, I'm sure if I took the neck off and checked the date and everything, you know, maybe I'd get lucky and the body was built in 87. But it just made me think, actually, you know, it would be very cool to own a guitar from, you know, the year you were born. And there is, I mean, 87 was a really, well, it was a great year. Certainly for guitars, certainly if you lived in Japan, because the Fender Japanese catalog from, well, actually they had the same catalog by the looks of it from 86 to 87. You had a wealth of awesome, awesome guitars, both vintage and new. So you had, of course, the 69 Paisley Telly at that point. They also did a all rosewood telly.
Wow. At that point,
which is very, very cool. They also had, because obviously we're going into the 80s here, so there was like Strat options with Kayla Trems. I think they called it the Boxer series by looking at this catalogue. But you had, yeah, basically Strats with like deluxe trems, Kayla trems, locking trems. They did a Strat with a Floyd Rose and a single humbucker in the bridge. So very much going for the Van Halen thing. They had a bunch of ridiculous 80s like basses as well, including like a, basically, is it the Swingster that's got that really weird like pointed body, the guitar that never kind of came out? Sure. Yeah, I think it's the Swinger or the Swingster. Okay. They did at that point. So, yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff in the 80s from Fender. But for me, if I could own any guitar from the year I was born, I would definitely have a 1987, because it's the year it was launched, Ibanez Gem. I mean, imagine being at NAMM when Steve Vai, the guitar hero of the time, basically walks out and he's got this crazy, like, because it was a brand new body shape as well. So you've got the RG with the monkey grip, the monkey handle grip. You've then got neon pink, Loch Ness green, and sun yellow. And under the Floyd Rose, that's a different color. All the knobs are like different colors, and you've got neon inlays and a matching neon headstock. Wow. What a guitar. I mean, I definitely wouldn't ever be able to afford one, annoyingly. The closest I could probably get without being too much money would be the RG550, which is effectively the same body shape as the Gem without the monkey grip, and in a more kind of standard set of kind of colors and specs. But yeah, an 87 Gem for me.
Very cool.
Kind of, Joe. Cool, what was 84?
Well, I mean, it's the same, Matt. It's the same problem that we have, is that actually all the things that I like are kind of 50s, 60s, 70s, and then there's this big plonk of time where the style of guitar really isn't my kettle of fish. And unfortunately, that is, 1984 is pretty much bang in the middle of that. And it makes me like, you know, Gibson weren't up to much. There weren't sort of exciting things coming out, not for me around that time. Gretsch weren't, that was the year that the Gretsch family bought back Gretsch. And I don't think guitar production came back until like 87, 88, something like that.
Right.
So there's, so I've got a couple of brands that I would go for out of default, not there. But then I was like, you're right. Japan, Ibanez, companies like that, they were thinking so far ahead. This doesn't have to be something that's ridiculous and amazing. It can just be a company that at that point in time were making the best possible guitars available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the guitar company that for me was absolutely ahead of the rest, Greco, at that time period. Greco Japan, absolutely killing it. And I was like, right, I'll find Greco's 1984 catalog. And it's amazing. They have this they had this range of guitars called the Metalize or Metalize, which is like advanced construction flying K's. I even found one on Reverb, their Mint Collection Series GTZ65 Metalize, which is I'm not entirely sure how to describe it, Matt. So I'm just going to pop it in the chat of this discussion, so you can have a little click on that and have a look. A flying V. It's a flying V with an extra bit, an extra horn on the top.
I would describe this as Jackson or ESP that basically have got a flying V where the lower horn, the lower point is shorter than the upper point.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is in reverse with an extra point on the bottom, on the top rather. So it's kind of like, half Explorer, half flying V, I guess.
Yeah.
With all of the 80s appointments you could want.
Oh, yes, gorgeous. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's an amazing sort of like off
vintage
white. Their own version. Yeah, you've seen the headstock, their version of EMGs, a proper Floyd Rose, it's probably a Carla Tremors, it's Greco and they owned Carla at the time. And like the scratch plate is an anodized gold that's sort of connected to the the pickup surrounds, but it's almost matching. And yes, Matt, try and explain the headstock to people.
So the headstock is a very large point that would cause serious damage to someone. but basically they went, well, because it's a Floyd Rose and you lock the strings at the nut, there's no point in actually having machine heads. So they've put a headstock on it, but they've got no machine heads. It's just a bit of extra triangle at the end.
Amazing.
Greco GTZ65.
They're amazing. The whole GTZ range is actually an incredible, dear listener. Please check them out. They are some of the coolest, very, very Japanese in the 80s guitars you'll ever see. In fact, in the 1984 Greco catalogue, the next page is titled Are You Ready for Carla? And it is all about their bass and guitar trem systems that you can retrofit onto some of their basses,
right,
as well as their guitars. So flying Vs and flying Ks with bridges. But no, okay, so I'm moving away from it. Obviously, that's not actually what I want. If I wanted a birth year guitar, I just know that Grecos were making an amazing quality Gibson
style guitars at that time period. And I think if I was gonna, pick one thing, it'd be a 1984 Greco Black Beauty Les Paul. Just a
nice, you know. Didn't you have one of those?
I did. It wasn't an 84, but I did have one, and I should have bought it, shouldn't I? It was part of my Japanese guitar shop, you know. So I'd have had to buy it because it comes through a supplier to me. But I should have bought one. I let them all go, and I regret it.
That wasn't the one that our good friend Thorpey.
No, Thorpey did buy one of them. In fact, he did get one of the Grecos, but he bought the one of the Mint series, and it was just the standard dual humbucker, and they were like the exposed coil humbuckers, right. The standard humbuckers. I wanted the actual Black Beauty one with the gold humbuckers and three of them.
Right. I was looking at, when we were sort of researching for this, I was looking at Bill Lawrence guitars. Now, I don't know a huge amount about Bill Lawrence guitars, apart from the fact I think he was like effectively a kind of custom shop in the 70s and 80s. I think he was really well renowned for he's actually German. I didn't know that. As a musician, Lawrence created pickups. He then went to work on as Framus. He was also a Fender endorsee. He basically designed guitars for Fender, Gibson, PV, and other companies. He also helped develop the Super Humbucker, made his own guitars as well, Bill Lawrence guitars, which you can still find to this day. And on Reverb, there is two ridiculous Bill Lawrence guitars, of which I want both. One is a Birth Year guitar, which is an 87 Bill Lawrence Esquire in Blue Burst.
Matching headstock.
With a matching headstock and a trem. it's ridiculous.
Matt,
and
it's
lovely.
Even available at a shop near you.
I know. Amazing. It's actually even got, it's even got like a tummy cut and an arm cut as well. So it's basically like ridiculous. A strap, but with a telly body with a trem. But more interesting than that, which I just think is, I don't know, I just, this got me thinking about mod mode very much, but they've also got a Bill Lawrence Challenger 1, which is effectively a Strat with one single coil in the bridge and one volume control. And it made me think very much about... and I forget his name, really sorry, Joe. I'm sure you remember from
Bleak District Effects.
Bleak District. We talked about it last
week.
Thinking
about the Strat that he had there. I put a picture of it in my sort of photos of the day on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, and lots of people have pointed it out and been like, "This is very weird. What is this?"
Yeah, it's basically this is a great example of a Bill Lawrence BCOR 55, which features a solitary S3 black label pickup. Bill Lawrence's heart was in pickups, and he had them basically host them in a fine range of instruments. We are putting this one at early 1983, all original, including Lawrence stamped saddles.
Damn, one year too early for me.
I know. And another maple fretboard for me. I was like, I need a Strat with a rosewood fretboard now. Mm. But I just think there's something like incredibly simple but also very charming about this guitar. It's just ridiculous, and I love it.
Are we going through an 80s phase, Matt? Is that what's happening?
I think so. I think that's it. I'm just going full 80s. I'm going to get my gem. Actually, friend of ours, good friend of mine, Alex Hutchins, has, I think, almost every gem they've ever made. Like, in terms of models, he's got an original.
And yeah, I never see him playing one.
No, they're all in his house somewhere. He's got an original 6-string and the original 7-string. Because don't forget, I think they were like the first commercial available 7-strings or something like that. Right. He's got like the Frank Gambale signature from the 80s as well. Ibanez, you can see why, coming all the way back around to the Strat Plus, why when Dan Smith and that sort of took over, they were like, we've got a big challenge ahead of us. You think,
yeah,
Fender Japan have been smashing the classics and they're doing a much better job at building guitars than we are in America. You've got Ibanez again from Japan, you know, with all of the best guitar players of the day. They're doing all this crazy out there stuff. You know, Gibson, I guess Gibson weren't, no one's really talking about Gibson at that point. 80s Gibsons, does it really ever sort of, do you ever go, oh, I think actually Rabea's got a 80, no, he's got a 78 custom. But you don't really hear people talking about Fender and Gibson. He had all these other brands at that point. Yeah. So you can see when they came back in, they must have been like, oh, I've really got to like step it up a notch. And so they did. But yeah, I mean, 80s Ibanez, that's the one. That's the one for me.
I think you've stoked the flames here for me. I'm going to spend the rest of my evening like looking through old catalogues of like Greco and Burney and Ibanez and trying to find a dream under the radar that I could get for on the cheap guitar. We'll see.
The other thing that I would, the other guitar I guess I would add into that, and I've only played one and it was only very briefly, but an 80s up to about 89, I guess, PRS. So right, those really early 80s PRSs, where you had volume and then the sweet switch, basically, which is like your tone control. Obviously, all hand built in America on a much smaller scale, much more hands on. I mean, PRSs are just as good now as they were then. But there is something very cool about some of the 80s ones. So I'm just like, yeah, that would, they would, and they did some great colors then as well, including some very cool pink PRSs from the 80s.
Of course.
So yeah, I think the best time to get a birth year guitar is if you were born in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, you know, and sorry for all the listeners born in the 70s, but 70s Strats, ooh, not exactly got the best best pick of the bunch there, unfortunately.
No, that is a shame.
Yeah.
Now, before we go on this podcast, I do want to talk a little bit about the do our show and tell for the week, because actually the. Today, if you're listening to the podcast as a Patreon listener and you're listening to it when it comes out, or yesterday if you're listening to it as a regular podcast, Great Eastern Effects Co. launched a new pedal called the Focus Fuzz Silicon. So the Focus Fuzz is a pedal that's part of the range that Great Eastern make, and it's a part germanium, part silicon-based fuzz. But, germanium transistors being rare and very expensive and temperamental.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's the key word there, temperamental.
Temperamental is the key word. It means that Great Eastern had decided to make a silicon version, but really try to emulate every subtle nuance of the germanium version. And I think they've got some videos up comparing the two, because they're still running, doing the germanium one. But basically, the silicon one is more affordable. Because you know the parts cost less money, so and it does very much a really similar job. But it's a great, super simple fuzz where I kind of really liked the simplicity of the controls, but how unique they were. Just three rotaries. You've got a fuzz, a focus, and a level control. Obviously, you know what the level's going to do. The fuzz control actually it alters the transistor bias at the same time as the gain. So the fuzz control is able to like offer kind of desirable sounds at all settings. You know, it's not just something you need to turn up to make it sound good. It's designed to work a couple of controls at once, which I think is a great idea, often a problem with fuzzes. And then the focus control progressively increases gain whilst rolling off low end, which is really interesting. So it means as you're moving clockwise, you're getting this more mid-pronounced, thinner, raspier fuzz tone, more sort of maestro, and then anti-clockwise you're getting this fatter full-bodied sound that works really well on bass, but it gives you that gorgeous sort of spluttery sound. Does a little bit more than a tone control, and I kind of felt once I understood what those two controls did, because of course, you know what I did when I had to go on the pedal, I just turn everything and sort of see where it is. But once I understood what those controls were doing, it was really easy to dial in a number of really usable
tones.
Sure.
It was very good indeed. So I'm gonna play you a demo, dear listener. I'll play you a little bit of a guitar one, maybe a little bit of how good I thought it sounded on bass as well, and then we'll discuss it after that. So here is some blues. So this the guitar version we're going for kind of a low gain. So the low bias and gain control with a relatively rotated mid-focused focus control.
Ever heard you play the blues, Joe, but I could just picture you at the Dog and Bone just absolutely ripping that one. It was absolutely fantastic.
I would love to claim responsibility, but actually Tim, the guitarist from Polyman, he was round yesterday and I was like, I'll play the rhythm guitar if you want to do some lead stuff.
Joe, you had me there. I was like, whoa, Joe, absolutely. I was like, oh man. Like,
no, that was Tim. He brought his Fidelity round, so that was his weird upside down Fidelity with 12s on it and action high enough for you to, you know, put your whole hand underneath.
It sounded really good. Raspy and glitchy when it needed to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, it had, to its name, it had quite a bit of focus to it, really cut through the mix, low to sustain, bordered on overdrive at points, but
yeah,
obviously when you're digging in, you're getting a little bit more out of it. So yeah, two thumbs up. I thought it sounded great.
Do you know what my setup for that, for Tim, is obviously his Fidelity guitar into the Great Eastern Focus Fuzz, into a Boss, what's it called? The little thing, the XD, the what do you call it? The cube? There we go.
The dual cube.
Just going to a dual cube with the like their Fender, so the American style preset on it. A little bit of reverb off of it. Line out into my interface. Because I was in my lounge, so I was like, oh, just grab my laptop and like, you know, a random interface that works on bus power. So that was it. That was the whole thing. I did nothing to it. Like a little bit of mastering on it so I could play it on here. But that's it. And it sounded great.
You really did. Well, good job. You had me fooled there, Joe. I thought that was you.
Well, without wanting to make this, you know, a complete sort of demo podcast, this is me. Here's some blues now with me playing a Fidelity bass with this pedal to show how versatile this pedal is. So in this case, I'm going the other way. Actually, I've kept the fuzz low, but the focus control is completely the other way. Loads of woof, loads of wob. And I'm using my Fidelity bass, strung with flats,
with the mute kit on. So I've got and I'm playing lead bass. Here it is. There it was. The same pedal, almost the same setup. This time it was going into the bass cube.
Again, I thought it had an air of Zappa about it. So like sort of late 60s, early 70s kind of jam band Zappa type thing. I thought it sounded great. I could picture that. And you'll like this. I could picture it being a kind of Jack Bruce Cream type thing.
Exactly.
Rocking the Albert Hall, going through an 8x10. Sounded great.
That sound for bass is just so good, so underused. These days, like whenever people apply fuzz to bass, it's inevitably to make a sort of Chris Wolfram, what's it like tone,
Wolfram's like style, whatever his name is.
It's that muse. That it's a very modern. It's very gated. It's very like a synthesizer, but it's a bass guitar. That's what fuzz is for bass. But actually, you're like, and I'm sure you can do this if you just roll off the tone on your bass rather than if you don't have flats and you know just palm mute it or something. But bass fuzz when you've got not very much high end going on, you get that it sounds like your speaker is collapsing in the amplifier and it is just the coolest sound. I love it.
I look forward when's that out, Mr. Joe?
It's out now. Well, it's out, we're recording on a Monday, Matt, so it comes out tomorrow morning on Tuesday, so it's out now for anyone listening. So
guitar notes discount, of course not. Jack the price up if anything. Cool. Well, no, I think great. Once again, great demos. I should really do a demo of my
I want to hear your strap.
What I should do is no backing track. I'll just jam on some sounds for a bit and everyone can hear how super stratty it sounds.
That would be great. You should do that.
Indeed. But well, I look forward to trying it out at some point. You'll have to send me a box of stuff again, Joe.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Probably
do, actually.
Don't wait till I move.
You want a box of stuff now, do you?
Okay. Yeah, just send it over.
It wasn't enough for me to give you a Strat Plus. You want a box of stuff now as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't keep that stuff. I have to give it back.
That's true. That is true. Well, dear listener, that is about all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon. If you want to get in touch with us or ask a question or for any reason at all, if you have a brand or anything that you think we should be checking out, or if you've just got a question or a suggestion of a dad joke, please do reach out. You can get in touch with us via email, info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram, you know, write us on Facebook. However you want to get a hold of us is absolutely fine. We're heading over to Patreon to talk about this week's questions of the week. I think we've got one from Jeffrey Wax and one from Martin Cox, perhaps. You can join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up and support our charming community. You can do that for as little as $1 a month. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Thank you to our top tier Patreon backers for your constant support and making it possible for us to continue
doing this podcast. Thank you to Rocket Rob Patterson, Marcus Deluxe, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Friant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einzer, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losif, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, the wonderful Moog Gravit.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.